Well, what a nice day today. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. Alan Gresick is putting on his headphones. He is almost about to sit down. He's looking for the volume knob. He is one of Chicago's great musicians. He is not as well known as he should be, and I'm going to change that by writing about him in a few weeks in the Chicago Tribune. Alan, you have had, with the Alan Gresick Swing Shift Orchestra, a running Thursday night gig at the Green Mill for more than 20 years.
Actually, it's going to be 20 years this year. November of 1998 is when we got in, so this is the 20th year.
So, and it is, from what I understand, it attracts everybody from 21, because you got to be 21 to get into the Green Mill, to 101. And what you do is focus on the great dance bands, swing music of the 30s and 40s, yes?
That's correct. We start about, our bass line is about 1933 with the Castle Loam Orchestra, later became the Glenn Gray Castle Loam Orchestra, but before he was the leader, they called it that. And then through the beginning of the swing era, 36, 37, 38. And then we don't go really think anything past 1947, because that's when bebop started coming in.
Right. So, but you've called it a number of times, that music, the rock and roll of its era. How do you mean that, Alan?
It is the rock and roll. Well, and I have labeled it as 1930s rock and roll, which some people think that's kind of idiotic. But basically, the rhythm section of a swing band is the same groove that you would find in rock and roll bands, and actually the same groove that you find in early country and western.
Is that right?
Early country and western bands are basically a swing band rhythm section with a violin and different attire.
And of course, you've got Chicago's got one of the leading practitioners of that, who learned how to play the clarinet at Hull House, don't they?
That's right, Benny Goodman. About a year and a half ago, I got permission from the Benny Goodman Estate. Benny Goodman, before he died, donated all his arrangements to Yale University, and we were able to secure a few of the arrangements. Some had parts, some just had the score, which without the parts, and so I had to play the score into the computer, into Sibelius, where then I was able to print the parts out. And one of the such tunes that we'll play today is a tune I found called Strange Fruit. I was looking down the discography and saw Strange Fruit, arranged by Fletcher Henderson, from 1939. And I'm thinking, is this the same
Strange Fruit made famous by Billie Holiday?
Right, yeah.
Is it?
A lot of musicians don't think so.
I'm not asking a lot of musicians. I'm asking you.
Could you play that?
Would you mind?
This was recorded on a cell phone. We're reading it for the first time.
Of course.
Coming up is Bill Overton.
Don't know him.
Yeah.
This is very nice. Was this recorded on a cell phone? Where?
A cell phone. One of my musicians. That's fine.
That's a nice tune.
Yeah, one of my musicians, Matt Lewis, who now lives in Colorado, but he still comes to Chicago to play jobs, was in the audience, and he knew what was up with Strange Fruit, and he wasn't too crazy, you know, playing something that could be, you know, racy.
Right.
But he recorded it on his cell phone. He stood on the dance floor and he just recorded it on his cell phone.
Well, but this music, this type, this genre of music was in its time kind of racy, was it not?
Racy and politically incorrect.
Why politically incorrect?
Well, there's a...
Because of the dances that were involved in it?
Well, mostly for print. On some of these downbeats, there was one downbeat from 1937 of Red Nichols.
Sure.
Playing, and the picture says, Red Nichols plays for a bunch of cripples as they kick up their heels.
What?
I don't think he could print that today.
Well, why? Who comes to this? I know there is a very solid, solid audience you have of people who come, but this is basically the music that my parents once danced to, and my parents are long dead. Who comes to see you on Thursday nights at the Green Mill, Alan Gresick?
Just the people that you said, folks that are 21, are probably the average age is probably in their 30s, late 20s, early 30s.
That doesn't seem to surprise you. It surprises me a bit. Where else have people that age been able to get exposed to this kind of music except Thursday nights at the Green Mill?
Well, it's twofold. The Green Mill is an institution, and so...
No question.
And so people go there just because it's an institution, and if they go there on a Thursday, not knowing what they're going to get, they're going to get, you know, a wallop of a lot of good music. And I had a gentleman from Mexico last week that said, you know, I normally listen to hip-hop, but this stuff is great.
Was he Mexican? He's a Mexican who's in the United States who came to the Green Mill and usually listens to hip-hop. Don't you find, Alan, and haven't you found over the years that people, when they are first exposed to this kind of music, generally you're the first exposure that they fall in love?
That's possible. There are a lot of big bands out there. The term big band...
Where are there a lot of big bands?
Well, the term big band, there's two terms for it. The term that we use it as is an adjective, meaning just a lot of people.
Right.
Modern, a lot of people, right. Modern big bands that play modern arrangements, the term big band is used as a noun. Now it's a person, place, or thing. It's a thing.
Yeah.
Where, so that's why I come up with terms like 1930s rock and roll. And a lot of times, I was at Nick DiGiulio's show a few years back, and I said, you know, people say, what kind of band do you have? And I say, a swing band. And they say, oh, I love swing dance. And he said, well, maybe there are some people that aren't too bright, but 100% are not too bright. So it's kind of...
Let me ask you, I've ever found you a fascinating guy, and I'm not going to ask you the very same question I did outside where I said, where are you from? And you said, where are you from? And you said, my mother. You grew up in the suburbs, right? How did you first come to music? What was your first exposure? Were these the kind of records your parents played?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I'll answer it best I can.
It's about as obvious a question, Alan Gresick, as I have in my repertoire.
So I was born with two conditions. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. Mm-hmm. It's probably both. But I was born both with bipolar and Klinefelter syndrome. And for you folks out there that have kids that have Klinefelters.
What is that?
It's I was born with an extra X chromosome.
Okay.
So I'm not... I'm mentally disabled, but with lots of proper medication and therapy, I'm able to come across, like when I go to work, I just know my boundaries for work.
Yeah.
I'm hired to play piano. I just go and I play piano. I don't try to make friends with...
Were you diagnosed very early?
No, I was diagnosed late. I was diagnosed... I did not say the word ah. That's so bad.
What?
Say the word ah. It's...
Wait, you did say it? You don't say it? You can't say it? What? You can say it on this show. Dan and I say
this guy
can
edit it out, right?
Yeah. This is live. Edit it out. This is going right now.
No, I was diagnosed when I was 19, and they didn't know how to treat it.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to third grade, by third grade, I couldn't read yet.
Okay.
And I had problems talking.
Oh.
So my parents kept me back. And, of course, that kind of ruined any kind of peer pressure skills.
What, and socialization, too, it must have been
so
tough.
So I just started, I became a professional isolator. And in 1974, the Sting came out, and I started learning ragtime. And then in 1977, my grandmother died, and I found a box of old 78s in the attic. And the first one I put on, it was a disc by Fur Grofe of a tune called Suez. And I was just captivated by it because those old records had so much surface noise. It was a treasure hunt to listen past the surface noise to the music.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So
Well, we got to take a break. We've got Alan Gresick discovering these 78s in his grandmother's attic, and we will continue that story after a short commercial break, during which I will tell you, watch for Chicago's Own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, and my guest, Alan Gresick. We are going through Alan's biography, and we have he's a young man. He has just discovered in his late grandmother's attic a number of 78 record albums that, in a way, not in a way, Alan, that changed the course of your life, didn't it?
It did.
Did you play any instruments at that time, and how old were you?
I played trumpet, and I believe I was fourth grade.
Yeah.
So,
you were sort of musically inclined.
Yes.
And then, how did hearing the music that your grandmother had saved alter your career path, life path, childhood path?
Well, I think it comes down to the first song I listened to, which was a late 20s record. I think if it would have been a late 40s, early 50s record, that would have been my path. But because it was late 20s, that was like the first impression.
Yeah. But it really did captivate you.
And I came up with this method where, and this applies to anybody, where the music that you listen to between sixth grade and the end of high school is pretty much the style you'll be listening to for the rest of your life.
Pretty much the soundtrack of your life then, right?
So even if the songs are different, you'll find recordings that are using the same mix.
Were you listening to any other kind of music, or you were so captivated with your grandmother's stuff that you concentrated on that?
I got into early Elvis Presley in junior high. Used to practice dancing like Elvis in the mirror.
Everybody got into Elvis in junior high.
My dad would catch me dancing in the mirror, and I just was so embarrassed.
Yeah, I think everybody whose dad caught him dancing in the mirror was embarrassed. Did that lure you at all? I mean, it didn't lure you away from this other stuff.
No, it didn't. But I think a person that listens to all different styles, or let's just say more modern forms of jazz, let's say that.
Right.
It has to be mature. And I think with 1920s and 30s music, you don't have to be mature to listen to it and enjoy it.
How did you then? Did you study music in college? Did you go to college? I'm curious now about how you started your career in music, which now finds you, you know, with a 20-year-long gig at the Green Mill, and as terribly admired, you've been written about in a number of publications, though not the Tribune, that will be coming up soon by my hand, but greatly admired in your realm. When did you start? When did you start to play? When did you first play professionally?
Well, to answer
all of those questions.
All of those questions.
Once, yes.
So out of high school, when I took my ACT, I got a 12.
That's not good.
And so I took it again, and I got another 12.
That's not good.
And so no college or university would touch me with a 10-foot pole. My parents were able to get me into Millikan, but this is actually when I was diagnosed with Klinefelter's. I was having just a lot of social problems, you know, just being isolating. I had like a urinary tract infection, and so they had me checked out, and the doctor ran some genetic testing, and he said, well, we've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is you are severely depressed and ready to kill yourself, but we can treat that with medication and therapy. The bad news is you have this condition and we don't have a clue on how to treat it. Now they do. Now they, you know, when basically biologically, my body doesn't make testosterone or estrogen.
Okay.
I'm like a worm or something. I don't
You're
know.
Not like a worm. the doctors get kind of squared away.
So, well, but they didn't. It wasn't until I was in my early 40s that I met an endocrinologist that actually put me on the right path.
So, how did you make a living? And then how did you make a living in your 20s and 30s then?
Well, I did my best to play solo jobs and some big band jobs.
Piano.
Yeah. But if it weren't for my parents, I'd be living under a bridge.
Wow. Wow.
So I have a good family.
Are they still alive?
My mom's, she doesn't want me to say her age. So my mom is...
She's alive.
Well...
Ageless.
Yeah, she's ageless.
Ageless.
They're both in their 90s.
Wow. Good for them. If you're listening...
If I told my mother how old she was, she would never forgive me.
You know, I'm not begging you to do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. But they sound like great people. Without them, you would have been lost.
I would have been lost. I would have been living under a bridge someplace.
Would you have stayed here or lived under a bridge in some nicer environment? I'm joking.
I don't know. You know, I did some cruise ship work in Florida, and going to the cruise ship, you'd pass the areas that, you know, the transient areas, and I think transient areas are the same no matter where you go.
Yeah, I do too. So when did you come up with the notion, or when did you have the emotional and intellectual wherewithal to start the orchestra?
It was in seventh grade. I used to have visions
of
seeing, you know, wearing a tuxedo, having some guy wave his arm. And it didn't really last. It was just kind of spotty here and there. The biggest hurdle I came across was finding musicians that actually liked the music, because the jazz that's taught in music school doesn't touch any of this. They start.
Why is that? I'm curious about that. I know that, but why is that? Do you think? Does it seem too old-fashioned or too not challenging enough, or what do you think?
Well, I gave you this sheet here.
Yeah,
right? This Y graph. This is brilliant. So after World War II, there was a split, and dance music went in one direction. Guy Lombardo,
mm-hmm.
dance bands like that with no jazz, and then the other side went off, and that's 45, 46, 47 is when bebop started.
Right.
And for whatever, what happened was, is the dance bands, a lot of the college musicians to make money played in these dance bands that didn't play any jazz.
Interesting.
And it was around the same time that bebop and cool jazz, and, you know, Miles Davis was coming out. Those students became the teachers, and now the teachers taught what they cut their teeth on.
Wow. Now, where else do you put? You also play, you're a working musician, every Thursday night, the Alan Gressick Swing Shift Orchestra plays at the Green Mill from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m., which is a wonderful time at night at any club. You also play on the weekends, don't you?
Yes, at Menards Hardware Store on Harlem, just north of 95th Street in Bridgeview, Illinois, from 11 to 5 p.m.
What do they have? They have a room upstairs or something?
They have two floors, and there's a grand piano. There's like a escalator that goes up to the second floor. They also have an elevator, obviously.
You played a bit for me and Dan Long during the break.
I did. I've been getting into taking classic rock music. Which, again, when I was, the Elvis was like kind of a brief thing that I went through. But now that I'm mature, so to speak, I'm able to go back to the music that I missed.
Yeah, and refashion it.
And refashion it. So,
would you play something for us?
Yeah, so here is, I've been getting into a Viennese waltz kick.
Okay.
And here is, I'll play just a couple of them briefly.
Sure.
One is I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles.
And the second, a Viennese Waltz.
As a Viennese Waltz.
Fantastic.
And the second one is Tiny Dancer by Elton John.
Got a movie out. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Gressick, without headphones. after the news, I want you to play the Elton John thing in there too. You also have become something of a collector. You have a lot of Balaban and Katz original scores that they used to play in the theaters.
Can you get ready to play the cut of Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
We can't. No, we got to take a break. We got to take a break for the news, but we'll play Santa Claus. Earl Coleman will play Santa Claus is Coming to Town right after we get to the news. This is fascinating, Alan Gressick. Alan plays with his Swing Shift Orchestra every Thursday night beginning at 9 o'clock at the one and only Green Mill that is on Broadway just a few steps north of Lawrence. What was that? That was you.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. That's what the classic bump, Dan Lund, classic bump.
So the Balaban and Katz Library.
Yeah.
How did this go? In the late 90s, met the girl of my dreams, fell in love, got married, didn't last a year.
Okay, that happened. So what?
Had my heart ripped out, and it took 15 years to get over this gal. I still think she's a great gal.
Okay.
Anyway, I decided to quit the music business and give all my arrangements, similar arrangements, to the Harold Washington Library. And my dad came up with a brilliant observation that maybe, you know, you can use their bigger collection and copy the stuff for free.
Sure.
Which can't tell anybody that, but...
Okay.
And so I'm able to go to the Harold Washington Library and use their larger collection of 38,000 arrangements.
Wow.
Which also include the WGN collection. And there's this story behind that. I know we only have 10 minutes.
Well, there's a story of the Black Hawk Restaurant. There's a lot of stuff.
The question you asked was, how did I find these arrangements? When I was at North Texas State, which I didn't last long either because of my mental condition, I put together my first band called Big Al's Hot Dance Orchestra, and that would be the Santa Claus tune, which was from the a similar collection from WFAA back in the days when radio stations.
Should we hear that?
Yeah, let's listen.
Ro, would you mind playing that Santa Claus something or other? Thank you, Ro Coleman, producer.
It was recorded on a cassette machine with that little itty-bitty microphone.
Wow. Sounds good, though.
And it was recorded in the old library that was
Cultural Center, yeah.
No, not this library. The library at North Texas State.
Oh, North Texas State. I don't know that library.
Yeah, right.
No, that's okay.
Great acoustics. So, again, we have to sit down for another conversation.
Yeah, we will. I'm going to write a story about it.
So let's go to the Rocon show number 2.
Ro, would you mind?
So now this is 40 years later, doing the same thing, but now I have a better grasp on what I'm doing.
Every Thursday night, you have a singer with you?
We have three singers. We have, so it's a 13-piece band, three trumpets, two trombones, four saxophones, which all double on clarinet, and some clarinet players can play hotter clarinet than others, piano, acoustic guitar, string bass, drums, and the drummer he's been really studying Gene Krupa a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
Steve Hawk, and he uses the old drums, the old cymbals, you know, really playing the I've been really, it seems like when I wanted to grow up, I wanted to be a talent scout. It seems like I've enriched the pockets of everybody around me except for myself.
Well, look, but Alan, you know, with a group that size playing one night a week, no one's getting rich playing at the Green Mill.
Well, no, but, you know, just David Sherman, who's one of the actors who wrote the commercial, the peanut commercial.
Yeah.
I gave him the opportunity to play with the band, and he made the stepping stone of playing with Ken Arland's band, Front of the House, which is the top wedding band in the city of Chicago.
Well,
he tries to help out when he can, but so the commercial coming up is these are commercials that are written by David Sherman on our show. So we're on our show like as if it's a 1930s radio
show. Sure.
But the commercials aren't old commercials, they're original, like this one.
And now a message from the makers of Sam's circus-sized peanuts.
Tasty. So salty. Yummy.
What you munching on, Doris?
Sam's circus-sized peanuts. I can't get enough of them.
I heard of Sam's circus-sized peanuts, but I never tried them. What makes Sam's nuts so good?
Well, they're not just nuts. They're circus-sized. Circus-sized peanuts are full of protein. They fill you up, and they come in a big top package.
Yeah, I can see. It looks just like a tin.
Circus-sized peanuts are bigger than normal nuts, and talk about delicious. Well, I can't stop popping them in my mouth.
Oh, I just gotta get my hands on a package of Sam's circus-sized peanuts.
Well, here, you can try a couple of mine. But remember, once you try circus-sized, nothing else satisfies.
Sam's circus-sized peanuts, the most carefully pronounced peanut brand in America. Available at finer kosher delicatessens everywhere.
Alan Grussick, you are one of a kind.
This guy has wit, man. He can just come up with stuff. He's got just that was probably kind of a risk. I played that for your producer beforehand just to make sure.
Rose of sophisticated women.
Make sure
the listeners of this show are sophisticated people. Alan Grussick plays every Thursday night with his Swing Shift Orchestra at the Green Mill from 9 to 1 a.m. Green Mill is on. He doesn't have his website up yet, but it's the Alan Grussick Swing Shift Orchestra. Alan, it's great to see you.
Alan Grussick, if anybody has any questions or any answers, please.
Give me your number, man.
708-860-1971. This is my cell number. If you have any questions or any answers, 708-860-1971. And if I hear from you, I'll send you a free tune.
There you go. You can't get a better deal than that.
Do we have any time to play anything else, or are we out of time?
No, we're out of time.
Oh, too bad.
You'll be back.
Because, you know, Jingle Bell Swing is...
I'll play it later in the show. It's promise.
Okay.
Promise. Got to take a commercial break, and then we're going to talk to my friend John Ziemek about his remarkable new book.